coming to you from the last video store in the universe. It's Binge Movies 169. Nice. I'm Jason. This is the show that ranks and eliminates movies to determine which ones are most worthy of preservation for all time, even beyond the end time. Boom! You decided, after a voracious debate known as Frozen Fury, which film would be added into our vault. We will get to that in a few short seconds. You decided over on Twitter at Binge Movies. Those votes are worth 1 point. If you are an assistant manager or below on patreon.com/bingemovies, those are worth 1 point, plus another point for being a patron. But if you are a elite patron, part of that ever so reclusive cabal of five mysterious shadowy figures who rule the world just below the shareholders in the corporate hierarchy here at Buena Vista Home Entertainment. If that's you, then your vote accounted for 3 points. And boy, we had a hell of a Frozen Fury. First ever Frozen Fury. That was this year's winter last movie standing. Our reigning defending champion, Pete from Middle Class Film Class, took on a secret adversary, Lindsay Washburn from YouTube, and various films that you can find in various places if you know where to look. That sounded worse than I intended it to. It just is the truth. I don't know exactly where the movies that she's been in are. They're in legal places, and they're in places no brown bag required, as far as I know. But they're out there. I just don't know where they're at. She's a great YouTuber, though. She's a great, she's a collector and all this great stuff, as is Pete. They're both VHS collectors, VHS perverts, as we like to call them around here. VHS maniacs. Ooh, yeah. And I have some thoughts before we get to the results and all that jazz. 8.1 is done, and their season is in the can. Their series is in the can. It's done. We march on to 8.2. We're going to have a live draft. If you're not a part of our Binge Movies draft, you can become a part of that. We'll get to those results as well after we make our announcement of what's going into the vault. If you want to join the Binge Movies Challenge, Jason, got all this stuff going on. All right, let me lay it out for you real quick. Binge Movies Challenge. You don't have to do anything but watch the movies that are on each season's list. At the end of the year, you get something. And if, or the beginning of the next year. So for those people who completed all 100 plus films from last year, their stuff went out. Now, it was already a little delayed, but the delay worked in my favor because it should be arriving for our winners of last year's Binge Movies Challenge. Your prizes should be arriving any day now. Hopefully they arrive by this Friday. That's my hope. But you should definitely have them by the weekend. And you will understand the timing when you get them. Made with love, right here in sunny tropical Akron, Ohio. And so that's it. That's the Binge Movies Challenge. What's the next thing you said? You said something about a draft. What gives? Blah, 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 blah. The Binge Movies draft is, if you want to put a little extra skin in the game, you don't just watch the movie. You come to one of our live draft parties over on patreon.com/bingemovies. You don't have to be a patron to be a part of the draft. And you get to put your name in, and we do an automatic drawing kind of thing, or a rando kind of thing. And as your name is called in a random draft order, you get to pick a movie. And there's a point system that we go over. Each movie that we review in the show that's part of the Binge Movies Challenge has a point, a base point assigned to it based on a stringent multi-page Google Doc point system. What's it worth on Rotten Tomatoes? What's it worth on IMDb, Metacritic? What awards did it win? Academy Awards, New York Critics Film Circle. Did it do good at Sundance? All this stuff is added into a base point value. Then, as the season progresses, We add bonus points. Did one of our guests pick it for the best of the week, the number one? Did I pick it? Did it make it onto the guest list or short list? Boom, that's some bonus points. Did it perhaps make it into last movie standing as the one of the final four films or two films or three films, however it works? So did one of our competitors in last movie standing have it in their final two? Did it make it past first cut? Yeah, boom, bonus points. And did it happen to make its way into the ever prestigious, with one asterisk, maybe one and a half, no copyright infringement tenfold? If so, bonus points. It's dynamic. We have one of the greatest all-time comebacks in the history of the draft, which just started because somebody, friend of the show, Claire, who was almost in dead last place, collected so much bonus points along the way, even though she had a low base point film, she made it into the tippy top. And she overthrew a number of season-long champs who were too comfortable in their spot. I'm looking at you, Brian. You got a little too comfortable, and Claire came for your ass. Better watch out. Now, I say that, but Scuttle's a gamer. He's a gamer, so he might come back. All right. I think that covers everything, right? If you want to follow us on Letterboxd, you can letterboxd.com/binge movies. If you want to buy merch, I'm working on a new t-shirt design now as we speak for spring-ish. If I get it right, it might be a perennial design. I haven't been able to crack it yet. It's sometimes the simple stuff is the hardest because it takes actual skill or Adobe Illustrator, and which requires a different skill set. So than I have. Skills are marginal at best. So bear with me, but I got it. I'm just working. I'm working. And if I get it to a place that is worthwhile, I'll post it over on Patreon for some of our top patrons over there to give it a vote, give their essence what they think. I've been doing some thinking. Speaking of patreon.com/binge movies, and my thinking is, I think you're going to see some changes over there just of what is offered. There's some benefits that nobody gives a shit about, so I'm going to do away with them. I'm going to simplify stuff down there, maybe just combine some tiers. I don't know. I'm thinking about it. So once I get past analysis paralysis, I'll make some notifications over on patreon.com/binge movies and just see how everybody feels about it and go from there. Just to make it more streamlined and more advantageous for both myself and for the supporters of the show. We've got some new supporters I'm really thankful for. Thank you so much from around the world. We've had sold some merch too. To some folks around the world, and people have hit me up. Some of the old familiar faces and some new faces, or at least new handles on the internet. And that's always great. Thank you so much. It's always an interesting thing, you know, when the non-usual suspects just pop up and go, "Hey, I've been listening to you for 5 years, finally bought a shirt." I'm like, whoa, it's cool. Thank you. So if you're one of those people that's listened to us for a very long time but has yet to engage because you think I might be crazy, you might be right, but you can engage from a distance over on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Leave us a 5-star review. Write something. Tell us what you like, what you don't like about the show. Leave us a 5-star. I need like 60 more. I need like 60 more. And then after that, I'm going to need about 100 more. But let's just get 60 more. Let's break it up into bite-sized pieces. Are there 5 people right now who feel moved in their spirit to leave a review, 5 stars, over an Apple Podcast? I see that hand. Go ahead and do that. Did you know over on Spotify, sometimes I put little questions on the episodes, or you can ask questions, and I very well may respond to them. Have little polls over there, too. I'm going to incorporate more polls over in Spotify. In fact, I'm thinking about expanding some very important polls over to Spotify as well. So a lot of stuff's up in the air. I'm talking out loud. I want to get to the results. But before I do that, Based on the analytics and numbers for these result shows, it's mostly just the hardcores. So I'm speaking from my heart to yours. If you're a guest here, a visitor here, and you're like, what the fuck is this guy rambling on about? Go back and listen to the previous season, series 8.1, and you'll be able to fill in the blanks a little bit better. Okay, I have some things in my heart, some things in my mind before we get to the results. Number one is this is Ghostbusters week. This will instantly date this, but that's fine. It's an instantly dated podcast episode anyways. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. I have done my best to avoid as much of the ancillary trailers as possible because I feel like they gave the entire movie away. I feel like I've gathered a good enough sense of what the movie is. That I want the whatever remaining surprises it has to offer to wash over me. If that makes any sense. I want it to feel fresh. The reviews coming out of the world premiere, and they're just basically just like basic impressions. And it's one of those things where they've taken over Hook and Ladder 8 in New York, which is the exterior for the firehouse. And they invited a bunch of ghost heads, Ghostbusters fanatics, and collectors and Ghostbusters groups to come. And then they did some press stuff and some meet and greets. And I don't know, they had like 36 hours worth of events. They eventually had the world premiere in New York at one of the theaters over there. And the whole cast and crew were there, all the people in the film. So it's interesting, it's embargoed, and so people have given their kind of general impression about it. If I had to guess, let me set the stage with what my expectations are. My expectations for the movie is that I think it's going to lean more on, just from the trailers, I think it's going to lean more on the horror and the comedy. I don't think it's going to be as dark. I mean, like, there's some dark stuff in the first Ghostbusters, and yet even darker stuff in Ghostbusters 2. I don't know if it's going to be as creepy and as weird and as dark as that, just because there's, I don't know. I think that they're aiming for a broader audience, and I don't necessarily fault them for that, because Ghostbusters 84 was a movie that was essentially made for like teens and above, right? It was made for, it wasn't made for little kids. But because the only toys and merchandise beyond like wearable fashion that came from Ghostbusters came a couple years later in around 86 from the real Ghostbusters cartoon series. And because the movie was one of the biggest movies of all time at that time, it just had this massive crossover appeal to everybody, everywhere, which is lightning in a bottle. You can't manufacture that. They certainly didn't. They made a really kind of weird movie, especially for its time, and it just so happened to like capture the imagination of a lot of different people around the world. Followed it up with one of the most successful animated series of all time, one of the longest running animated series of all time. Certainly the most successful like adult film adaptation, which there were plenty of in the 80s. Cartoon of all time, one of the most successful toy lines of all time. By the end of the 1980s, the Kenner real Ghostbusters toys were outselling Star Wars because Star Wars was seen as being dormant. Ghostbusters was the next big thing. It eventually sort of got supplanted by Turtles in the early 90s, but still, it just had a hell of a run. And there was a whole generation of people who were shaped by that, so that even when they came back 5 years later in 89, they had to take the cartoon somewhat into account. I think they did a really piss poor job of taking in the cartoon into account. We didn't want Janine to become a cartoon character. We didn't even want Janine to become the secondary Janine in the cartoon series. That was from some market analysts, market research groups, what they called Q4, I think, they're meddling into the animated series, so much so that when some of the original writers came back in later seasons, they penned an episode, I think it's called like Janine, What Happened? Or Janine, You've Changed, actually, where they just like retconned it and be like, oh, the reason why she lost all of her spit and fire and became like this kind of motherly figure is because she like made a wish to try to impress Egon and get a man and she didn't realize that the Ghostbusters loved her just the way she is, with all the fire and brimstone and the, you know, the brassiness of it. And she reverts back to herself. So they had to address it in storyline because they kind of fucked with it. Well, they ended up making Annie Potts behave much more like Janine from like the later animated series that nobody really liked. Nothing against the voice actress, just wasn't true to the character. So, and I think they just ignore that, right? I think she's basically in Afterlife. She's basically the Janine we've always known. I think we'll see a lot more of her in this, obviously. I think she's going to be the Janine we've always known, and I'm happy for that. I think what they're going to incorporate is, rather than try to like soften it for kids, I think that they're going to get back to the, try to get back to the essence and the spirit of like Dan Aykroyd's original vision for Ghostbusters, which is thinking in terms of franchise. I think by the end of this movie, we're going to be looking at global franchise. I think you're going to be looking at a lot of action. I think like the real Ghostbusters, it's going to be, I think we're going to follow them in a lot more jobs. And if they're not actually like the real Ghostbusters, were like, we'd see them literally like go on two or three like Hotel Sedgwicks, or at least one Hotel Sedgwick, and then you'd get kind of into the main story. That was kind of the flow in the 22-minute episodes. Or the job would end up being bigger than it was supposed to. And so I don't think we're going to get, I don't think we're going to montage over all of that like we did in Ghostbusters 1 and 2. I think we're actually going to get to see them do what they're doing. I think most of that action is going to be with the Spengler family, who are going to be doing the day-to-day ghost busting. And I think they're going to incorporate the old guys in as like the auxiliary crew, the overseers, you know, the elders, so to speak. And I think that's fine, you know. I think that's fine. There's been always like, well, are they going to kill any more people? I don't think so. I don't think they're going to kill Bill Murray. I think that ship has sailed with the real life and death of Harold Ramis. It can't go that well twice. And that was so real. It was a genuine goodbye to Harold as much as it was Egon. You just can't like cheapen that with like a fake Bill Murray death just because he doesn't want to wear a proton pack anymore, you know? So I don't think so. I don't think any of the OGs will die. Do I think we'll get, you know, some setups? Do I think by the end of it, Kumail Nanjiani will be into Ghostbuster for sure? You know, will Patton Oswalt be a Ghostbuster? Maybe, you know, he might be. You know, I think that they're just going to broaden that whole world. And my only trepidation with that is, are we doing that because there's story to tell, which I think there can be, or are we doing that because we want the Ghostbusters, the real world Ghostbusters franchise? Sony wants to be able to, they need a franchise, right? Other than Spider-Man. So, I don't know. I am very grateful that in the sea change after Amy Pascal and the series of debacle she was involved in, that there's new administration at Sony and new people who, I don't trust them with superheroes, certainly don't trust them with Spider-Man, but I think that there are people at the helm of Ghost Corp and Sony's division that works directly with the Reitman estate and Aykroyd and these folks. I think they get it now, finally. I think the fans have kept mostly Ghostbusters alive based on our passion for Ghostbusters. It was not something that they were like willingly cranking out a bunch of different stuff. I mean, there was long stretches, decades, which it was just completely dormant. And I don't just mean movies. I mean, you know, yeah, you could kind of always find t-shirts and the no ghost symbol, because that was like easy. But the amount of action figures and collectibles and, you know, the consistency of that, I think they've seen that there's an audience. I think they've seen, oh, well, if we make a real proton pack, would anybody buy it? And it's like, well, tens of thousands of people would buy it, even though it was very expensive. If we bought it, made a real PKE meter, that one sold even faster. What about a real ghost trap? HasLab sold that even faster. I should be getting that hopefully this fall. And my equipment will be complete, basically, other than Ecto goggles. So I feel good about where the franchise is going into the movie, I guess is my point. I think they're taking it in the right direction. You cannot do another going into business, going back into business. movie. I mean, I think there'll be elements of that in here, but I think you have to do something different. I think the one thing we haven't really seen is what is life as a Ghostbuster? Right? Like, what's life in the firehouse like? What's life in, like, we've seen it in, like, the montage, like, you know, you don't look good. I don't know. You look better. You know what I mean? You never used to look like this. You know, this is Winston Zeddemore. He's here for the job. Beautiful. You're hired. Pete Venkman, Ray Stantz, Pete Venkman. Welcome aboard. Like, other than the fact that it's like kind of a shitty job, we don't have a sense of what it really means to be a Ghostbuster. So if this movie can deliver on that and give us some family moments, I will say this, I have an inkling that the movie is going to end with them crossing the streams again, and I fucking hate that. That's one of my great nitpicks of Afterlife, and after this, I will move on to the results and wrap up this episode. The crossing the streams creates a protonic reversal. It reverses the proton flow. Which would essentially, what does that mean? It essentially means that that proton stream that comes out of the muzzle of the neutrino wand would actually kind of invert the flow back into the reactor and blow it up. So if you have four particle accelerators exploding at the speed of light, it would probably, at the very least, disintegrate them, you know, beyond an atomic level, if not the universe. The idea, of course, though, was that protons are, that psychokinetic energy still involves the energy that, of the universe that we live on, neutrons and protons and so forth and so on. So that the spiritual world, so to speak, does not actually completely defy the laws of physics. It's just a different plane of physics. But the basic things still apply to it. So if you have a dimensional portal, this is really nerdy stuff, but if you have a dimensional portal to this hell territory, this pocket dimension where Gozer dwells, and it has to collect psychokinetic energy to open a gateway to be able to come through, there's a certain particle flow of that gateway. And if it took a certain particle flow to open it, there's theoretically a certain particle flow that would close it. So if you cross the streams, it would essentially obliterate the protonic essence, for lack of a better term, of that gate. So Gozer wasn't destroyed. Gozer's destructor form of Stay Puft was destroyed, but Gozer wasn't destroyed. Gozer was sucked back to its dimension. Gozer's ability to be manifested in our world ceased to exist because the Stargate, for lack of a better term, the portal was destroyed. Okay? So the door swings both ways. There's definitely a very slim chance it will survive. We crossed the streams. You know, I thought you said that, you know, cross the streams was bad. So I got those lines a little bit mixed up, but that's the essence of it. So crossing the streams while facing Gozer, like they do in Afterlife, isn't really going to do anything to her because it's the gate that has to be closed. And the other thing is they kind of find their way around it. They find their way around it with, if we could trap part of her essence, they add lore to the terror dogs. So the terror dogs have to be possess people and be like in human bodies, but revert to their forms. But if you separate the human from the terror dog form, it somehow separates Gozer, right? Like that is somehow the gatekeeper and the keymaster are like the thing that keeps the gate unlocked, which makes sense. And they kind of expanded on that. I'm fine with that. So you didn't need to cross the streams, but it created a dramatic moment and a callback and da da da. That being said, I think it's the weakest part. I love that the Ghostbusters show up. I love that they kick her ass. I love that Bill Murray is actually Venkman. I love what they did with Harold Ramis. It moves me to no end. I mean, the whole sequence, I think, is actually beautiful. It fucking looks like him. Like, there's no uncanny valley. It helps that he's a ghost. But, you know, it just, Even the facial expression, I just, oh, can't talk about it. I'm getting choked up. But they didn't need to cross the streams. It is my prayer that they do not cross the streams in Frozen Empire. I think they're going to. If I had to guess at the ending, I think all the OGs are taken out of action and the Spengler family has to step in and save the day on their own this time. And that's their baptism of fire of like, okay, you have finally come together as a family unit and you're truly ready to take up this mantle. But you're not going to do it alone because we're going to go with you every step of the way. And I think you're going to see I think they'll semi-retire, but not really. And they were already semi-retired. So I think that the folks at Frozen Empire, Jason Reitman and Gil Kenan, I think have learned a great many lessons from the sequel series of Star Wars. I will leave it at that. Okay, why don't we go to the vault?
With 83% of the vote, the next entry into the vault is 1954's Seven Samurai by Akira Kurosawa.
It's hard to call that an upset, right? Was Seven Samurai in any world going to lose to The Dark Backward? I don't think so. Especially with, I mean, the argumentation, the facts just happened to fall in the favor of Lindsay Washburn. But I do want to commend Pete because Pete very easily could have said, okay, I pick Seven Samurai and just continued winning, but he did not want to do this anymore. So I'm not saying he threw in the towel. I'm saying I think that he wanted to challenge himself and say, okay, if I'm going to do this, let me pick a real challenge. And what's the realest challenge I could pick to see if I can make a point? And that, of course, was The Dark Backward. I don't think it's an entirely ridiculous premise to say, yeah, we need some oddball stuff in the vault. I'm always in favor of that. I don't think The Dark Backward is good enough. And I also think, like, going from Hellraiser 3 to The Dark Backward, like, you get one of those, you're not getting both. Especially when you're up against the most influential film of all time. So, Pete has been defeated. And Lindsay Washburn, the VHS vixen with a VCR heart, the video huntress herself, is your new, reigning and defending, undisputed, Last Movie Standing champion. What does that mean for the draft? I think it's time for a draft update.
Now the Binge Movies Season 8 draft standings, 15. Dan with 2 points, 14. Julio with 3 points, 13. Brett with 4 points, 12. Brad and Heather with 5 points, 10. Joe with 7 points, 8. Paul and Giuseppe with 8 points, 6. Jason and Corey with 10 points, 5. Brian with 14 points, 4. Megan with 15 points. The Binge Movies Draft Series 8.1 top 3. In third place, Claire with 17 points. In second place, Eric with 18 points. And in first place, David P. with a massive 52 points. Congrats to our top three, and best of luck to all players in the next round.
What a comeback for Claire. And what a cataclysmic win for David Powell, co-host of We Watch a Thing over with friend of the show, B. Dizzle. David, man, you're sitting pretty. But if this season has proven anything, 8.1, if it's proven anything, is don't ever rule anybody or anything out. So 8.1 goes into the pocket of David Powell, but there's doesn't mean it's over yet, folks. So I will be announcing the next season, 8.2, next series draft, the 8.2 draft in short order. But in the meantime, I'm working on series 8.2. We got some great movies. We've got an episode as chosen by our elite patrons. Very first one of those. They all got together and conspired against me and chose honestly, some really enjoyable films. I really enjoyed that episode. I think you're going to like it too. And Lord willing, we're going to see some new faces, new voices, and some familiar voices along the way. I think 8.2 is going to be a good one. I got to be honest with you as I close this one out. 8.1 might be my favorite series altogether. I loved every guest. I loved every conversation. I didn't love all the movies, obviously, but I had so much fun. I had the payoff at the expense of Paul concerning the Ghoulies after planting that seed year after year after year after year, and finally being able to pull it off is truly like top three experience for me. And loved it. And I love giving Paul a hard time, but what would this show be without him, right? I mean, he's practically an unofficial co-host of the show. And it all comes from his suffering. And that's a sacrifice I'm willing to continue making. Until next time, binge on.